can't ask for anything else, honestly. You know, the opportunity to come to a team of this caliber in the position they're in, you know, I'm just excited to get here and to help out as much as I can. He told me, you know, kind of dictate how the game goes. Obviously, he felt like, too, the game right there was an opportunity for me to help out. And, you know, didn't get the job done tonight, but I look forward to those opportunities more and more as the season goes on. It seems like a great group of guys. Obviously, the results speak for themselves. And like I said, I just want to come in and be a part of this.
I always love it when we can get good work, and we got good work both sides of the ball. Anytime you can get a chance to get some really solid evaluation against people that you don't see on a daily basis, it's good. And not only that, we got a lot of reps. Most people tell you I'm not that nostalgic, you know, and just in terms of looking back, but I obviously have 10 years spent here and certainly have some good memories. We won a lot of football games, had a lot of good teams and great organization, so we certainly enjoyed it while we were here. It's valuable for almost every position that we have, particularly with the younger guys, because you just don't have an opportunity to see different people running routes against you or blocking you or anything of that nature consistently. And so anytime that we get these, it's invaluable. We'll adjust. You know, that's part of this game. You know, you're going to have some injuries. You're going to have some issues, some ups and downs. Just give somebody else an opportunity to step up, get a few more reps, get a little bit better. You know, that's how we look at it.
For all the work they put in to go win a game. I mean, they keep score. As I said before, it don't matter how you do it. I just think it's good for the confidence of our players. They needed to go win this game. We found a way to do that. Obviously, there was some sloppy play early. You know, way too many penalties to my liking. I think we had 12. So it's things that we will definitely work through and get straightened out. You know, now you'll listen very carefully to Coach Williams, myself, and Coach Tabor and the rest of the staff when we tell you things, because these are the things that stop you from winning. Penalties and those type of things don't help you win games. Some spotty play, but I think there was some good play at times, too. So we got to grow from these things. Cody got an opportunity. Would have liked to see get him a few more snaps, but I wanted to see Deshaun play. I thought I needed to put him out there in the fire, and I think it was a great experience for him. There's a lot for him to learn from, but I thought there was a lot of good things that he did. Stood in there, made some plays with his arm.
Things that definitely do jump out to me. You know, those first two series, we had some penalties. I threw some incomplete passes. You know, we weren't able to get into a rhythm as an offense. And I think anytime you struggle to get into a rhythm early, you're going to have a slow start to the game. And that's what you saw tonight. There's no excuses for that. Honestly, I think that comes onto my shoulders. I have to find a way to spark this offense early, make plays for this offense early. And then, you know, going into the third series, I think we did some pretty good things on offense. We got some first downs. We ran the ball well. You know, the one thing I can tell you is the offensive line did a tremendous job tonight. I mean, I don't even think a finger got laid on me.
The Saints were you know, straightforward with what they're going to do. They're going to play you man. They're going to blitz you. And if you're going to do that, you got to be able to take shots on a team like that. So we dialed them up at the right time and got ourselves into some great protection. And, you know, the offensive line protected great on those two big throws. And it's up to me to be able to, you know, maybe throw a tighter spiral so that Mulaney can get in the end zone rather than coming up a half yard short. You know, this whole process, you know, the goal is to gain confidence in everything we're doing. There's a reason that we're still in training camp after preseason game one. It's because, you know, I'm still in a developmental stage of my career.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome to the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. So very glad you could be with us this afternoon. My goodness, we have a loaded show. First of all, I should let you know that I'm solo for much of the show today. Jim Cushlin is not here, so... Oh, boy. Fans can be brutal sometimes. Jim Cushlin will be here, though, however, a little bit, because he is out at Yark Chrysler Jeep Dodge and Ram on Central Avenue, so Jim Cushlin will be around a little
bit.
All right. He'll contribute, I promise. He'll contribute to the show. Listen, coming up at 4 o'clock, 4:10 roughly, we're going to talk about some of the preseason action last night and on Sunday. Last night, of course, the Browns hosted the Saints, and you got a taste for the first time in the National Football League of Toledo's own Central Catholic product, Deshaun Kizer. And I think people liked what they saw. I know I liked what I saw, all taken into context, of course. Given the fact that he didn't start, given the fact that it wasn't all against the ones, and all of the rest, everybody should be happy with the debut of Deshaun Kizer if you are looking for the Cleveland Browns to be successful in the future. It's not about this year. It's about the future. So we will talk about last night's Browns and Saints game. Out at First Energy Field. That'll be with Scott Petrak at about 4:10. Then at 4:35, we go to our boys up north of the state line, And we're going to talk with Jeremy Raceman of PrideOfDetroit.com. That's the SB Nation Alliance site. They start their preseason, of course, on Sunday with a 1:30 matchup against the Colts. And, of course, we'll have that for you here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. So we will talk a lot about those things in the next hour. For this hour. However, I think it would be incumbent upon us to discuss former Ohio State Buckeye, current Dallas Cowboy, Ezekiel Elliott. Ezekiel Elliott is going to be on the shelf for the first six games of the 2017 season, suspended by the league for violation of the league's personal conduct policy, specifically as it relates to, yeah, those two words we don't like to hear together, domestic violence. The NFL says that they have consistent and persuasive evidence. It's a couple of troubling words, actually. Substantial and persuasive evidence. I want to quote them directly. That Ezekiel Elliott committed domestic violence, harming a woman three times in 1 week. Tiffany Thompson, who had multiple instances of physical violence committed against her in July of last year, by Ezekiel Elliott. This according to the NFL investigators and four, they claim, outside investigators. Now, how you feel about the charges, or not the charges, beg your pardon, and that's kind of part of the discussion. How you feel about the statement made by the NFL and the decision to suspend Ezekiel Elliott may in large part be influenced by two things. Number one, the absence of police charges, prosecutorial charges against Ezekiel Elliott. If he is this domestic abuser, why hasn't he been locked up? Why hasn't he at least been charged and is awaiting trial for this? If the police and the prosecutors don't think there's enough evidence to go forth, why is the NFL doing this? That's number one. Number two, let's just be blatant and honest about it. Fellow Ohio State fans, there's a bias there. There's a bias on behalf of former Buckeyes. I'm reading Twitter, I'm reading Facebook, and I'm seeing a whole lot of Buckeye Nation ripping the NFL. How dare they do this to Ezekiel Elliott when there are no charges against him? My response to that would be, please, do at least a little bit of homework. Be at least a little bit intellectually honest. The National Football League is allowed to suspend players without them being charged criminally for various crimes and allegations of crimes. How many times have we seen players suspended by the National Football League for drug use? But wait a minute, aren't drugs illegal? They weren't arrested. They weren't prosecuted. So therefore, how can they charge somebody suspend somebody with drug use? And people say, oh, well, at least there were positive drug tests there. Yeah, that's very true. Ray Rice, as you recall, did not face a prosecution in a court of law, despite a video of him punching his then fiancé in the face. Why didn't they prosecute? Because the fiancé, like so many other battered women, did not want to press charges, did not want to hurt her man. And perhaps in a lot of these cases involving celebrities, not all of them, of course, I'm not going to impugn the victim in that case, Mrs. Rice, of this, but in a lot of cases, this is not news. This is psychologically proven on a number of levels. There have been a number of surveys, there have been studies, reports written about this, books written about this, but a lot of victims of domestic violence never press charges, either out of A, fear of losing what they have, particularly if they are being kept in a pretty doggone good lifestyle with the exception of the occasional beating, or B, out of fear of worse beatings, if not killing. We don't have to look very far for the worst example of this, of course. The numerous photos and incidents of Nicole Brown Simpson being battered and beaten by O.J. Simpson, and she declined to press charges every time except once. She only pressed it once. She probably could have gotten him locked up for a long time had she pressed charges every single time he did it, but she didn't. Want to know why? She was afraid of being killed. Greg Hardy. You recall this? Greg Hardy was convicted in a court of law by a judge of domestic violence against his girlfriend in North Carolina just a few short years ago. But then because North Carolina has a bizarre law that says if you're tried by a judge, which you can choose, and you are convicted, you can appeal to a jury. You get a second bite at the apple. And when it came time for the second trial, the jury trial, the victim in the case was nowhere to be found. Why? Either she paid or he paid her off a lot of money to go away, or he threatened her to go away, or else he would kill her this time. A lot of times women don't like to press charges. That's very important to note. Which is why the NFL is taking new steps here. And when I say new, I want to be very careful. Ray Rice, as I mentioned, there was no prosecution of him because his wife did not want to press charges. So they dropped and dismissed all charges, and he entered some sort of diversion program. Okay. The NFL suspended him anyway. Why? No conviction. No charges. Ben Roethlisberger was suspended by the National Football League a few years ago, despite allegations against him that he made unwanted sexual advances against two women in a bar, in Pittsburgh bar. Those charges were dropped for lack of evidence. NFL suspended him anyway. You don't have to be charged. You don't have to have a prosecutor investigate you, indict you, charge you, in order for the NFL to say, we've had enough of you. There needs to be discipline. There needs to be punishment. And that's what happened in this case. The NFL said, look, we don't have to wait for the prosecutors. We're not talking about charging you with a crime. We're talking about you violating the personal conduct policy that you, Ezekiel Elliott, like every other player in the National Football League, signs when you sign your contract. It's a policy that doesn't say you have to be convicted in a court of law. It says if you do anything that we deem to be embarrassing to our product, to our professional teams, to the league itself, if you violate a personal conduct policy that we decide, we implement, then you can be suspended. And every single player signs his John Hancock or illegal Ezekiel Elliott. Boy, there's a Freudian slip, huh? Illegal Ezekiel. Wow. Anyway, they sign their name to it, and they know this is the way that it goes. So for all those people who are up in arms about Ezekiel Elliott, oh my God, they suspended him for 6 games, and he wasn't even charged by police. This is bull. This is wrong. All kinds of other vile words that I can't say on the radio that I'm reading on social media. But the NFL, again, saying that they have substantial evidence, persuasive evidence, finding that Ezekiel Elliott did engage in physical violence against Tina Thompson on multiple occasions during the week of July 16, 2016, and that violates the league's personal conduct policy regarding domestic violence every which way, six ways from Sunday, if you want to mix your metaphor up there, and that's exactly why they did what they did. Now, there was a tweet that was sent out a little bit earlier this afternoon at about 12:22 that I would like to share with you. It was tweeted out by reporter Mark Garofalo for the NFL Network to his 127,000 followers. Mark Garofalo said this is the official statement from the National Football League on the Ezekiel Elliott situation. I want to read the entire thing to you. Bear with me. It's a few paragraphs long, not too bad. But keep listening because it's important to the discussion. And oh, by the way, if you want to talk about it and you want to tell me you're right on, France, or you're high, what's the matter with you? They can't do this to him. Whatever your point of view is, it's fine. 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. But I want to give you the background of this story, okay? From the NFL, by way of Mr. Garofalo, back in 2016, the Columbus Prosecutor's Office said they would pursue charges against Elliott due to, quote, conflicting and inconsistent information across all incidents resulting in concern regarding the sufficiency of the evidence to support the filing of criminal charges. Actually, I should reread that. There's a typo in this. Wow, what a terrible place to have a typo for this website. Back in 2016, Columbus prosecutors said they wouldn't, how do you not have the an apostrophe T there, pursue the charges because of the conflicting and inconsistent information. Now comes the question, then, how do the for the Cowboys, How does the National Football League find consistent information here to warrant the suspension? Here's the letter now officially from the National Football League. Ezekiel Elliott suspended without pay for 6 games is the heading. Ezekiel Elliott of the Dallas Cowboys was notified today by the NFL that he will be suspended without pay for the team's first six 2017 regular season games for violating the league's personal conduct policy. Over the course of the last year, the league conducted an extensive investigation. League investigators interviewed more than a dozen witnesses, including Ms. Tiffany Thompson, who had alleged multiple instances of physical violence in July of 2016, and Mr. Elliott. The league also consulted with medical experts. League investigators examined all available evidence, including photographic and digital evidence, thousands of text messages, and other records of electronic communications. Pursuant to the personal conduct policy, Commissioner Goodell sought the views of 4 external advisors, see below, and then they list them below, to assist him in evaluating potential violations. These experts range in experience from law enforcement, judicial and public service, and other specialized subject areas. So 4 outside investigators, not part of the league. The advisors participated in a meeting on June 26, 2017, in New York City with with Elliott, who was represented by his legal team and the NFL Players Association. The group also reviewed the league's investigative reports and materials, the expert medical reports, and multiple NFL Players Association submissions on Elliott's behalf. In a letter to Elliott advising him of their decision, Todd Jones, the NFL Special Counsel for Conduct, said these advisors, quote, were of the view that there is substantial and persuasive evidence supporting a finding that Elliott engaged in physical violence against Ms. Thompson on multiple occasions during the week of July 16, 2016. After reviewing the record and having considered the views of the independent advisors, the commissioner determined that the credible evidence established that Elliott engaged in conduct that violated NFL policy. Elliott may appeal this decision within 3 days. If he does not appeal, Elliott's suspension will begin September 2nd, the day of NFL final roster reductions. He is eligible to participate in all preseason practices and games. Elliott will be eligible to return to the team's active roster Monday, October 23rd, following the Cowboys' Sunday, October 22nd game against the San Francisco 49ers. That's it. That's the end of the communication from the NFL. As of now, what we are all waiting for very desperately is the Cowboys' response to this, particularly that of Jerry Jones, who is said to be furious with the National Football League because he himself, Jerry Jones, had predicted publicly there would be no suspension of Ezekiel Elliott. All of these myriad incidents of allegations against Ezekiel Elliott were all wrong. They were all misunderstandings. They were all just situations that he found himself in that were out of his control. He didn't do anything wrong. Well, the NFL says not so much. You did a lot wrong. And what you did wrong, particularly as it pertains to domestic violence, is something that we, the NFL, are never going to stand for again. They took the Ray Rice situation and they screwed it up. They allowed Ray Rice to get by on a 2-game suspension for punching his wife in the face. And this is, of course, because there was no video. Then they got video and it was like, oh my gosh. Then they went the other way and said indefinite suspension. It turned out to be the end of Ray Rice's career. Indefinite became definite suspension. Josh Brown, kicker for the New York Giants, accused and admitted in, or found to have been to admitting, admitted in diaries of domestic violence against his wife. The Giants were going to keep him employed. The NFL was going to give him a slap on the wrist until they realized, holy cow, and then out come these diaries and all the specific evidence of what he did, and then he got banned. The NFL cannot afford more black eyes when it comes to domestic violence. They cannot afford more mistakes and more looking the other way and giving guys the benefit of the doubt if they're out there abusing women. And the NFL decided we're going to make that point known right now. Ezekiel Elliott, you're done. What I want to know from you is, did they do the right thing? What I want to know from you is, did the Dallas Cowboys, or excuse me, the National Football League, do the right thing by way of Ezekiel Elliott and the Dallas Cowboys, or is this an overreactive punishment because they screwed up the Ray Rice situation? Because they were accused of being soft on domestic violence when they allowed Greg Hardy back into the league after his case that I described moments ago. Did the NFL do the right thing or not? I would love your thoughts on it at 866-240-1065. Try to keep your, you know, Ohio State fandom, if you are a Buckeye fan, try to keep that at bay and evaluate the situation based on its merits, not about your, you know, your fandom for Zeke. Conversely, if you're a Michigan fan, try to keep your hatred for Ohio State at bay and don't just sit here and say bad things about Elliott because you hate the Buckeyes. Look at the situation objectively if you can. I will tell you this. I was arguing with some people online before the show started today on social media, Facebook to be precise. And people have said, how can they do this when there's no proof? How can they suspend him when there's no proof? And I said, what are you talking about? Again, they suspended Ray Rice indefinitely without any prosecutorial evidence, without even though they had that video. I mean, the prosecutors dropped the charges because the wife didn't want to press them. And somebody said to me, yeah, but there was video, so we know that he did it. And duh. Yeah, there was, but this is part of the problem in my estimation. This is part of the problem, I think, in our society in general today. I think we have become so infatuated with YouTube, so infatuated with videos on Facebook, with GIFs online. I think we've been so infatuated with everything that happens being on somebody's cell phone, somebody's smartphone, that we feel as though if it isn't on video, it didn't really happen. There's no proof. I don't see video evidence. You know, before, everybody had a video camera in their pocket or purse. We used to solve crimes all the time with, you know, evidence, things that lead us to conclusions by way of factual evidence. That's how crimes used to be solved. And that's how cases like this used to be investigated. But now it seems to be, oh, there's no video, then it didn't really happen. How do we know for sure? Well, the league's investigators found out for sure. And the four different outside counsels that they paid to study this situation and to investigate also found this. And this was the agreement that they came to, that Ezekiel Elliott did indeed commit those violent acts against this woman, violating the personal conduct policy as it pertains to domestic violence. So I want to know how you feel about it. Are you in Zeke's corner? Or do you think Zeke, who has just been an absolute bullying bore ever since he got to the National Football League, whether it's, you know, getting arrested for bar fights, whether they drop the charges or not, we know these things happen. On video, pulling up or pulling down, I think it was up, a woman's shirt at a St. Patrick's Day event, exposing her or trying to, all while being under investigation for these domestic violence charges. The guy has a serious problem with impulse control. The guy has a serious problem with, you know, keeping his cool. And it's obviously, apparently, you know, not being violent, not beating this girl. So I want to hear your thoughts. 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. I've got a lot more on Zeke Elliott, and I've got a lot more on the NFL to talk about coming up. But first, it's time for our stat of the day.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports.
Each and every day we try to bring you the Wild Stat of the Day from Buffalo Wild Wings. And how about the Kansas City Royals? Here's a wild stat. They suddenly suck. They have now lost 8 of their last 10 and 4 in a row after pulling within 3 games of the Indians for the lead in the American League Central. Fortunately for them, the Indians are just treading water, and they are only 4 back. But they have lost 8 of 10 and 4 in a row, and in that time, they've allowed an average of 7.9 runs per game to the opposition. So suddenly they can't pitch out in Kansas City. That is your Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. Coming up after this timeout, bottom of the hour, Sports Center. We're going to go out to Yar Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram on Central. We'll catch up with Jim Cushlin, get his thoughts on all of these things. Ezekiel Elliott. If you're wondering why we're not talking about the NFL free agency, where did that word come from? Preseason, NFL preseason openers last night, especially the Browns and the Saints. That's because of Ezekiel Elliott. That's why. We will talk about those things in hour number two. We'll review Browns and Saints last night. We'll preview Lions and Colts coming up on Monday or Sunday at 1:30 as we continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
3:41, continuing on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's what we're talking about.
What's next for the Cowboys from an appeal front? What's the next step?
Okay, Ezekiel Elliott has 3 days, 3 business days, to file notice of appeal, and a hearing must be scheduled within 10 days of receipt of notice of that appeal. So that means, let's just say it's Friday, the 11th. Let's say Ezekiel Elliott appeals Tuesday, which would be the 15th. The appeal would have to be heard by the 25th. The bottom line is, I don't think it's going to affect the start of the season. If there's some reduction, look, he's not going to have the entire suspension overturned. In this particular case, the commissioner hears the appeal, or a commissioner's designee, likely Harold Henderson, hears the appeal. So it's hard to imagine that even if he appeals it, and even if he's successful, that there's a huge situation here where they can reduce the suspension to overturn it. That's not going to happen. Could there be a reduction? I guess, but we don't know the particulars of the case.
Adam, I'm curious if this case, with regard to the NFL's measuring out, metering out its punishment here, is this case viewed in a vacuum, or are other off-field incidents, with regard to this specific player, Ezekiel Elliott, are other incidents taken into consideration when this sort of punishment, this suspension, is handed out?
Well, here's the situation. The league considered primarily the incidents, the domestic violence incidents from February and July of 2016. And the other situation that the league did factor in was the St. Patrick's Day altercation that occurred when he pulled down a woman's shirt. Now, I'm told that that didn't enter into the final decision of discipline of 6 games, but it's a situation where the league decided that 6 games is warranted primarily from, again, the allegations made against Zeke Elliott.
So there's a little report from ESPN and Adam Schefter, the NFL insider, on where the Cowboys go from here with respect to the charges against him. And not charges, the suspension levied against him. The NFL says they have photographic evidence of his ex-girlfriend's injuries caused by her in that week long that she accused of Ezekiel Elliott of doing those things to her in July of 2016. I want to get a quick call in here, and then we're going to go to Jim Cushlin out at York to get his thoughts on this as well. Shane is in Liberty Center. Shane, thanks for joining us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. You're up. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Bob. Just real quick, you know, your question was, did the NFL get it right?
Yes.
You know, in my opinion, you know, I just think they didn't. You know, I look at a guy like former kicker for the Giants, Josh Brown, who, you know, openly admitted 20 different times, you know, to beating his wife, was convicted of domestic violence. He got a 1-game suspension. You know, I just listened to, you know, the breakdown of Zeke, and the main word I heard in there was allegation. You know, he hasn't been charged with anything, and he got 6 games. So I just don't see how that adds up.
Well, it doesn't. It doesn't. And here's the thing. If you look at both of those two situations, which one is the correct one? The one in which you don't take domestic violence seriously and suspend somebody 1 game before eventually realizing, okay, that's the wrong thing, and then cutting him, and that's what the Giants did, and so he's gone. Or this case where they're taking it very seriously. Now, the part that I would say before you consider the question there, Shane, is do not be misguided into thinking that the court of law means anything here. You don't have to be charged with a crime or convicted of a crime in a court for the NFL to say, based on what we see, we are suspending you for violation of the personal conduct policy that is spelled out in our CBA and that you agreed to when you signed your name on your contract with the Cowboys. That has no bearing on this whatsoever. The league says that their four different independent investigators confirm that they have enough evidence, particularly photographic evidence of the injuries to his then-girlfriend, that are enough for them. That if a prosecutor doesn't want to touch it, that's fine. They're not going to lock him up either, but they are going to suspend him from the job.
Well, and you know, as far as you know, which one is the right one, you know, I think they got to, you know, just meet somewhere in the middle. One game is obviously not enough. Six games, I think, is too many. And
why?
You know,
hold on. Why? Well, tell me why six games is too many. What's the right number of games if the NFL credibly believes? Hold on. Let me finish the question. What's the right number of games, Shane, if the NFL credibly believes that he routinely and at least three times in 1 week beat this woman? And then had the other things involving, the grabbing the woman's top and pulling it up at a party, it's on video on St. Patrick's Day and all that other stuff. While under investigation for the domestic violence, you have that little pattern of behavior, but it all goes back primarily to the three incidents of domestic violence. If the NFL credibly believes that, how many games is the right number of games in your mind?
See, I don't know what the right number of games is myself, but I think that, you know, they're trying to send a message right now. You know, they're getting stricter and harder on and coming down on any of these things that these guys do, and domestic violence is one of the worst. You know, so I think they're trying to send a message. I think that six games was too many. It'll get reduced down to four games is probably what he'll serve, and it'll be.
Yeah, but I'm not going to let you off the hook on that, Shane. If you say that six is too many, you have an idea in your mind of how many is the right number, not just how many you think it'll be reduced to. But if you say six is too many, you think that three counts minimum of domestic violence are worth fewer than six games. Give me a number. Shane in Liberty Center, you call it.
I'm saying four games.
Four games. And how do you come to four versus six?
You need to do it the same all the way across the board, okay? You can't have one guy over here getting one game and another guy getting six games and another guy getting four games. You know what I mean? It's got to be the
same.
Well, see, now this is
where I think you're dead wrong. Because think about this. If the Brown situation would have been handled properly, you know, again, he's out of the league. They cut him, so I guess that's about as many games as you can make. Forever, you're gone now. But the original thing of one game is just ridiculous to me. With the amount of evidence they had there and the history of the abuse there, he shouldn't get the same amount of games as somebody who only did it once. I think he ought to get something a hell of a lot harsher than what Elliot got. In the same I think Elliot should get something a lot harsher, and so should Greg Hardy. They should get harsher penalties and suspensions than somebody who, I don't know, grabs his wife by the arm really hard and bruises it. She takes a picture of it and says domestic violence. By the letter of the law, she's right, but I don't think that guy is going to be and should get the same amount of games as say, Elliot does. So, you know what I mean? You can't just say it's here's the penalty for domestic violence when there are so many levels of domestic violence. You know what I mean?
I agree. There's different levels of it, and I think the Josh Brown situation was a little bit different because some of the information that was leaked from that was something that he was speaking to a therapist about, and it was a confidentiality breach, I think, that came about that. So the information that was obtained from that is a little bit different circumstance. But, you know, I don't know. I think six games is too many for Zeke. I'm not a Ohio State fan by any means. I'm a Michigan fan, but I still think that six is too many. And you know, maybe four is not enough, depending on how many charges it was, but they've got to figure something out to where you can't look at it on paper and see, you know, one guy getting a one game suspension and another guy getting a six game suspension, even though that guy has not been charged with anything and the other guy has been convicted.
Yeah, but again, you got to stop that. You got to stop bringing that into play. Ben Roethlisberger had all charges against him dismissed, and the NFL still suspended him four games. Ray Rice,
and that was originally
had the NFL.
That was originally six games too, wasn't it?
What's that?
And that was originally a six-game suspension that got reduced down to four.
I think that sounds about right, actually. Yeah, but there were no charges against him. They investigated, but then they declined to press charges, And so, and the same thing with Ray Rice. Again, the original two-game suspension, once the video came out, became indefinite, and he never faced charges because she refused to press
those charges. The Rooneys were also in full support of the commissioner's decision to suspend him, too, as opposed to Jerry Jones, who's absolutely livid that Zeke suspended. So that may have something to do with it, too. But,
yeah, you're right about that. Shane, thank you, my man. I appreciate the call. Let me get out to Jim Cushler now. Jim is at Yark Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram on Central Avenue selling cars or washing cars or detailing cars or something like that today. Cush, you there, bud?
I indeed am, Bob. How's it going?
He was right, by the way. Roethlisberger originally was suspended 6 games by the National Football League for violating the personal conduct policy, even though the charges against him were dismissed. So he did not face charges from a court of law, got 6 games, and I didn't hear people going ballistic about how, oh, my God, how unfair is the National Football League and Roger Goodell. Why, Cush, do you think so many people, think that Ezekiel Elliott is so damn special that he shouldn't get the same thing?
Well, before I answer that real quick on this heavy stuff for this Friday, I got to make a quick announcement for some lighter things. Kudos to our promotions guy, Tom Stout, and for me for doing some house cleaning in the studio the other day, because for the first time in a while, I'm out here at one of these wonderful Yark remotes, and I have prize things to register for.
Nice.
Dennis DeYoung on August 17th and Grand Funk Railroad on August 19th, they're playing at the Rib Off. You got to register and come on down to Yark Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram to register for a chance at that. And I also, for those who may remember, we were a Cincinnati Reds affiliate, albeit briefly for 2 seasons, but they kept sending me cool stuff, and I just the other day found the box. So also while you're here, a chance to win a Billy Hamilton bobblehead. So I wanted to make sure I get those lighter fun things, because I am loaded with prizes for the first time in a while on one of these remotes. So I just wanted to get that out there, so come on down to Yark Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram here on the Central Avenue Strip.
You can't very well say Dennis DeYoung's name without, me. Yeah. We kind of have to do this for a second or two.
That's no problem.
Because I want to go to that show. I really want to go to the show.
Unfortunately, I think you and I are ineligible to register for that.
What's that?
I think you and I, though, are ineligible to register for that.
Yeah, we're eligible to buy tickets. That's it.
Right.
We can't get it, but that's very cool. So if you want to go out and see Cushlin at Yark today, you can indeed.
I'm leaving, I must be on my way. The time is drawing near.
Sorry, I'm a classic rock freak, and that is an all-timer, and there's not too much I can do about it. All right, but in the interest of time, speaking of time, Jim Cushlin.
Okay.
So Zeke gets the 6 games. People are going ballistic on this because, there were no charges. There were no charges. They declined to press charges. Well, they declined to press them on Roethlisberger, too. And nobody freaked out. They just said, he deserves it. Why is Zeke getting such a pass from people on social media? And not just here. Not in Northwest Ohio, where there might be a pretty decent amount of Ohio State fans that might be biased toward the former Buckeye. But really, across the country, it's free Zeke, free Zeke, free Zeke. Nobody did that with Roethlisberger.
Yeah, and that's taken me a little bit aback as well, especially because, as you correctly point out, you zoom out. It's not just I'm a Buckeye fan, I'm being biased. No, this is going beyond that. And yes, as Shane, the previous caller I overheard, he was pointing out, no, he hasn't been officially convicted or anything, on this, whereas, say, comparing it to the Josh Brown situation. I will say this. Both of you, on one level, though, are hitting something that I think is kind of correct here. You can't have it be a blanket, this is what it is for domestic violence. But given the NFL's attitude on this subject in recent years, and what they want to try to do when this type of thing comes up with one of their players, there has to be, in my humble opinion, a minimum, and then you increase it based on the severity. And I think 4 is a good starting point, because remember, in the National Football League, 16 games, 4 games, that's a quarter of the season. That's a pretty big, chunk, relatively speaking, in the NFL season. As for why there's all this free Zeke, especially if you compare it to Ben Roethlisberger in a similar situation years ago, I'm at a loss for that one. I mean, part of me wants to say, well, that's just, you know, everybody loves, you know, this Cowboys America's team kind of thing. But then I remember, no, there's plenty of people, myself included, who hate the Cowboys and therefore should be on the other side of that fence. I'm okay since there is no current standard for how the NFL wants to dole out suspensions in this kind of case. And, you know, these are different allegations. This isn't just one allegation that's out there. These are multiple allegations going back at least a calendar year. Because don't forget, this is the end
July product. July of 2016.
Exactly. So this is the end product of a lot of all of this, and the suspension's coming out now. FYI, or word that I'm getting and reading about, you know, the Jason Lockett Fours and other on Twitter saying that Ezekiel Elliott does intend, at least at this point, to try and appeal the suspension. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, well, he's got Schefter's 3 days to file that. Of course he will. And chances are it'll be just like Roethlisberger's. It'll be reduced to 4 on appeal. That's why they want
to. That's kind of what I'm thinking, too. And that's kind of what I'm thinking, you know, is going to happen on this one, too. And that's why, especially listening to your last quick conversation with the caller, Shane, on this one, that's why I'm starting to think, you know, when this subject comes up, the NFL wants to handle it this way, whether you're convicted of it or not, whether because technically in Ezekiel Elliott's case, you're in the allegation phase of this. I think you have to start these kind of suspensions since they clearly want to send a message about this issue. Then you got to start your suspensions at 4 and go up for severity, because 4 games, and don't forget, in the NFL...
So 4 game is minimum, and then you might get more than that.
Precisely. And don't forget, in the NFL, if you're suspended for a game, you know Zeke isn't getting paid anymore for these 6 games. And, of course, as we've mentioned in the past about the NFL, these aren't, you know, non-guaranteed contracts and all that stuff relative to, say, basketball or baseball. So that's a big chunk. And somehow the message has to start being sent to players that this kind of stuff, if it comes out against you, even if you're eventually acquitted of it, messages need to be sent that this is not, we're not going to tolerate this.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's, you know, I don't even need to hear about the acquittal. You know, I don't need to hear about, you know, the charge, the prosecution, acquittal, or anything else, adjudication. The league doesn't need that.
Precisely.
The league can suspend people for drugs without convictions of drugs. They can suspend people for any number of things that are embarrassing to the league.
Yep.
That's in the personal conduct policy. If you comport yourself in a manner that brings embarrassment, shame, or disgrace or discredit to the league. Now, by the way, that's not why Colin Kaepernick isn't playing. For anybody who's trying to draw that, no, the league has not banned him. He is perfectly legal and eligible. He's not suspended.
He's an active, totally available
free agent to be signed by anybody. It's up to the owners to decide whether they want to employ him.
Precisely. I'm with you on that. Don't anybody else try to compare the two. Kaepernick's a whole different kettle of fish.
But having said that, again, what we are talking about here is a personal conduct policy that every player agrees to when they sign their name on the dotted line for their multi-million-dollar contract. They know that the contracts are indeed reflective of the language guaranteed in the collective bargaining agreement. And that language gives the league power to suspend, even without courts of law or police agreement or anything of that nature, based on whether or not they believe you have violated that personal conduct policy. If the player doesn't like it, they have recourse. That's called an appeal. If they still don't like it, let's say the 4-game suspension after that, they have more recourse. That's called quit. Get your A out of the league. Go find another job. Park cars. Be a bank teller. I don't care what you want to do. Go someplace else. But the truth of the matter is, this is not exclusive to the National Football League. Everybody knows, or at least should know, that there are many, many companies that have their own personal conduct policies.
Right.
You don't have to be arrested. All you have to do is do something, say something, be accused of something that brings shame and discredit to Microsoft, to Apple, to Joe's Crab Shack. If you do something that violates the personal conduct policy of the employer, you don't have to be arrested for it, to be suspended for it, fined for it, docked for it, or fired for it. And that's what happened here. And if you don't like that policy at your employer, Jim, if you don't like the policy of Cumulus that limits you and doesn't allow you to do some things that you think are okay, but they don't, even if they're legal within the boundaries of the law, if you don't like that, you can quit and go someplace else. The time is now for Zeke Elliott to say, I agree with the bylaws, I agree with the collective bargaining agreement, I agree with the personal conduct policy, I will serve my suspension after my legal appeal, it'll probably be four. I will serve my suspension and learn from this and grow from this and become better from this. By the way, that is what Ben Roethlisberger did. Ben Roethlisberger, since all of that went down, has, according to virtually everybody who knows him, completely flipped on a 180, went from the immature party punk kind of kid that he was to a family man who is just completely, I mean, just about the picture of NFL, you know, model shield behavior, if you will. Elliott can do that, or he can say, I don't like it, I quit. So it's up to Zeke.
It absolutely is up to Zeke from here on in, and as I point out, and you said you kind of agree with that, that I do think it'll appeal, it'll probably get suspended for four games. That's another reason why, thinking about this, I think four games should be the kind of minimum on this kind of thing.
The bare minimum. Okay, let's get a timeout here at the top of the hour. Sports Center coming your way. Scott Petrak will talk all things NFL with us, including last night's lid lifter on the preseason with the Browns and Saints. Then we are going to talk about the Lions as we talk to Jeremy Raisman of SB Nation, PrideOfDetroit.com, about their lid lifter, which is coming up on Sunday at 1:30, Lions and Indianapolis Colts. A game, of course, you'll have right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. Dennis, take it.
To be able to take shots on the team like that. So we dialed them up at the right time and got ourselves into some great protection. And, you know, the offensive line protected great on those two big throws. And it's up to me to be able to, you know, maybe throw a tighter spiral so that Mulaney can get in the end zone rather than coming up a half yard short. You know, this whole process, you know, the goal is to gain confidence in everything we're doing. There's a reason that we're still in training camp after preseason game one. It's because, you know, I'm still in a developmental stage of my career.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling onward on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader. 10 minutes after four, that was Deshaun Kizer, Toledo Central Catholic product, Notre Dame product, now the quarterback of the future. Question is, how far off into the future of the Cleveland Browns? Made his debut in a preseason game last night against the Saints and earned rave reviews from almost everybody. Is he perfect? Absolutely not. Did he miss some throws? Absolutely. Can he get better? No doubt about it. You heard the man right there, but my, he had to be encouraging for Browns fans everywhere who have been begging for somebody to play that position at an effective level for more than 2 weeks. Joining us now to talk about that and all things National Football League related, including the Ezekiel Elliott suspension that has everybody's gums a-flapping, is our good friend Scott Petrak, who covers the Cleveland Browns out in Cleveland for the Elyria Chronicle and the Medina Gazette. Scotty, thank you, my friend, for the time. I appreciate it. How are you?
I'm good, Bob. How are you?
I'm good, man. You know what? I want to spend some time on Deshaun. As you know, he's a Toledo product. People around here are all cheering for him. It's a great thing. And I want to talk about other good things that you saw last night. But let me get this out of the way first, since it's the big NFL elephant in the room. And that is Zeke's six games. Scotty, too many, too few, just right.
That's such a hard one, Bob. My initial thought
Welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Hit your head out of the gate.
Maybe a couple too many, but I don't have a big issue with the NFL suspending guys just because, and, you know, everybody objects because Zeke, you know, hasn't had to serve any time and there haven't been any charges filed against him. But that's what kind of separates the league. The league is on its own, and it took so much grief for the whole Ray Rice scandal that perhaps it overreacted, but I kind of like the fact that they're trying to set an example. And if their investigation, we have to assume that they're doing their due diligence, but if that showed that Zeke, you know, was guilty of transgressions that they think is against the personal conduct policy, then I don't have a problem with them suspending him.
I agree with you. And while some may say this is in response to the Ray Rice situation, as you just alluded to, I've just been posting on social media during our top of the hour timeout here, that to me, I don't think that's the case. And I don't even know if this is charting a new course, if you will, for suspending somebody for something perceived to be very serious without the criminal justice system being involved, because there were no charges against Ezekiel Elliott. To me, the comparison is the Ben Roethlisberger comparison, which precedes the Ray Rice situation.
Yeah.
Roethlisberger was alleged to have committed a sexual assault in a bar. After lengthy investigations by both the Pittsburgh police and I believe the county sheriffs, they did not have enough evidence to charge him, so no charges were brought. And despite no charges being filed, the NFL suspended him. Do you remember for how many games?
I want to say two, but it could have been four.
Games.
Was it really six?
Six games. Identical to Ezekiel Elliott, later reduced to four on appeal, which I think Elliott's were as well. But they suspended a player for six games for violating the personal conduct policy, even though he faced no charges. Identical to Zeke Elliott. And you know what didn't happen when that went down a few years ago? Nobody freaked out and talked about how unfair this was, the way they are calling for free Zeke right now. Why do you think people are so they're all rallying around Ezekiel Elliott? The NFL says they have pictures, photographic evidence, along with digital evidence, including thousands of texts, which prove that he committed these three violent assaults of this woman last July in 2016. And I got to believe, Scotty, if they don't have those, they're opening themselves up for one massive lawsuit. If they said it publicly, chances are they got them.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I think the reason is, I think it's twofold. One, there's a lot of skepticism about the NFL and the commissioner's office because of how they've handled other high-profile investigations, not only criminal, but the Tom Brady, you know, Deflategate. You know, people think they butchered that. So I think any time the league takes a big stance on something, a lot of people just go, the league's wrong. And I think another reason for just public reaction is Zeke won a lot of people their fantasy football leagues last year. And the fact that he's not going to be playing for possibly the first 7 weeks because they have a bye after the first 6 weeks, I think just rubs people wrong just from a personal standpoint. People go, man, this is going to affect me. So it's really interesting. I think the Roethlisberger comparison's a good one. I think it's legitimate. The league also suspends guys for DUIs when, in fact, they don't plead guilty to DUI. They get a lesser charge. They might not serve any time. They might get it thrown off. You know, it's not even on the record. But if there's been arrests made, a lot of times these guys get suspended for that. So it's not unprecedented, but it's taken a long time in this situation. And I think, you know, we're just so more aware of everything nowadays. And the fact that there were no charges filed and it seemed like, man, maybe Elliott's going to go free here. And then the league comes down pretty harsh.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think it's sad that you're right about the fantasy football part. Yeah. If people are freaking out over Zeke Elliott missing games because it's going to hurt their fantasy football team if they've already had their draft, and not freaking out because Zeke Elliott, according to the evidence the NFL says they have, routinely beats women. And we're talking about three different beatings, they say, that they have uncovered through four independent investigators who they hired to look into this. That's a pattern of abuse that makes him a really, really, really bad guy. And if they're more concerned with their stats and any money they might win in fantasy football than they are about a really, really bad guy playing football for their for the, you know, the Dallas Cowboys, I think that just really is it's pretty twisted, man.
Yeah, well, I can't argue with that, Bob, but you know, I don't think that's really that unusual, and I think that, you know, Dallas is America's team still. Probably the most popular team in the league, and a lot of people root for the Cowboys, and this hurts the Cowboys. Around here, a lot of Ohio State fans, people loved Elliott, right? He helped them win a national championship, so you don't want to think negatively about that guy. So I think there's, and I think he comes off okay. Like when you talk to him in public, when you see him interviewed, he's got the big smile. He jumped in the giant Salvation Army bucket. You know, so like he doesn't have this negative persona about him before these incidents, and you know it shouldn't matter, but it does. We don't have videotape, right? It's not like the Ray Rice thing, so I think it's hard for some people maybe just choose not to conceptualize that and go, hey, this is the same guy that wore his midriff shirt at Ohio State. I rooted for him then. You know, nothing's changed my mind yet.
Yeah, and around here, I think you're right. Where you are in Northeast Ohio, where we are in Northwest Ohio, a lot of Buckeye fans, and you're probably right. But what's weird to me is Twitter. What's weird to me is Facebook. What's weird to me is social media. People are all over the Richard Sherman, who doesn't have any connection to Ohio State, ripping the NFL for being so terrible here. I fear they're going to make this racial. I fear they're going to make this something that it really shouldn't be. And again, I fear they are completely forgetting about an absolutely identical scenario in terms of no criminal charges, but a six-game suspension handed down 7 years ago in 2010 to Ben Roethlisberger. So.
Right. Well, what would be interesting is to talk to a guy like Joe Thomas, because he is so anti-Roger Goodell that I think a lot of guys in the league don't care about the facts. They just think the league comes from a biased standpoint and maybe rules anti-players, that it doesn't really matter what the facts were. You know, and it's tough for, you know, a normal guy to know the facts. They haven't, you know, Joe Thomas or Richard Sherman haven't looked at the thousands of texts that the NFL did. But I think they just don't believe Roger Goodell, and they don't believe he acts not in the player's best interest, but from a fair standpoint. They just don't think he's fair, and therefore they don't believe anything he does.
I don't like Roger Goodell either, particularly because of the way he handled the Brady case, to be quite honest. You and I didn't see eye to eye on that throughout that entire year and a half long mess. But I'm not a big fan of Roger Goodell either. But I'll tell you what, when it comes to these kinds of cases, Scotty, and we're talking about domestic violence, we're talking about abuse, we're talking about especially if it's a pattern, not a one-time thing where somebody lost their temper and grabbed a woman by the arm and bruised it or something of that. That's not the DV we're talking about. We're talking about domestic violence in which the NFL claims they have photographic evidence of and they detailed it, by the way, in the letter to Ezekiel Elliott informing him of his suspension, saying that you caused injuries to her face, arms, wrists, hands, and on down the line. And they've got pictures to prove it. So I take that stuff extraordinarily seriously, and I will take that even over my personal dislike and distrust of Roger Goodell on the whole. So let's leave that there for now. It's the biggest story in the NFL. I had to ask you, but, of course, you covered the game last night out there at First Energy Stadium. The Browns lifting the lid on their 2017 preseason. And everybody talking today isn't about Brock Osweiler, who started the game. It's about DeShone Kizer. And, of course, fans here in Toledo of DeShone know full well. They know what he's capable of doing, even if nobody thinks he's going to be the starter at the start of the season. Boy, he opened some eyes last night. Give us your review.
Yeah, I was impressed, Bob, and one of the things that impressed me the most was we'd seen him only 6 days earlier at the intra-squad scrimmage back at First Energy Stadium, and he was not good. He looked jittery in the pocket. His footwork was terrible. He missed guys open. He was inaccurate pretty much all day. Had a chance inside the red zone and couldn't do anything in there. So, you know, I think that was one of the main reasons he didn't start last night, is because how badly he performed in that scrimmage. So to see him 6 days later, same venue, bigger stage, and perform like he did, I think it shows something about the kid. And I was really impressed with how he was in the pocket. Sure, there were a couple plays where he held onto the ball too long, but for the most part, he showed really good pocket awareness. He could feel the rush. He would just make those little movements inside the pocket that separates the quarterbacks. You know, a lot of guys, they try to get out of the pocket. He would just slide or step up and then deliver a strike, whether it was a deep comeback or the two deep throws he made down the field, one to set up a touchdown and one for the winner. I just thought he did a lot of good things.
You know, it is amazing, as you said, from that Brown and Orange scrimmage to this one now. What's interesting to me, Scott, is the pattern, I think, that maybe kind of developed a little bit around the league over the last couple of nights. You know, you go back to DeShone Watson two nights ago. You know, Tom Savage played against the ones. DeShone Watson came in against the twos and threes and lit it up. And everybody said, oh, my gosh, he's ready to go. Last night, it was, of course, Mike Glennon for the Chicago Bears going against the ones, playing terribly, 2-for-8. Mark Sanchez comes in against the twos primarily, didn't do very well. And then, boom, Mitch Trubisky goes crazy against the three. Oh, my God, he might be ready to go. DeShone Kizer, similar situation. Do you think that the Browns fans understand that what they saw last night was not a first-team defense, it was not a full blitz strategy and package that would have been put in, that this isn't the kind of thing you can expect from a rookie at the developmental stage of a DeShone Kizer, that this is common in preseason football?
Well, I hope so, and, you know, we've seen a lot of this, right? When we have a new rookie quarterback just about every year. So you see a guy like a Johnny Manziel make some big plays and fans get excited. And there's no problem getting excited. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. And the way Kizer played last night, fans should be excited. And I think the Browns should be excited. Now, you do have to take it all with a grain of salt, right? Who they played against. The Saints did blitz a decent amount, and he picked it up. He handled that. But he's playing against second, third, and fourth teamers, guys that aren't going to be in the league in another month. So you have to take that all into consideration. However, I think that's one issue. And then I think a separate issue is, if he's not freaked out, if he's not overwhelmed, then what are they waiting for? Why not get him into action as soon as possible? Because playing week one against the Steelers is the best learning tool there can be. And we've seen other big-time quarterbacks, even if they get destroyed their rookie year, I think it helps them in the long run.
I think that's true. It really does in the long run. You're talking about short-term gains and wanting to see progress. And let's kind of compare that to Hugh Jackson, who has been so very clear. And you and I talked about it a couple of weeks ago too, Scott. That 1-15 in his first year as head coach of the Browns sits with him hard. It keeps him up at night. He has sworn that kind of thing will never ever happen again. He wants wins. How much would he or should he be willing to sacrifice short-term pains? Even if, as you say, you know, Deshaun says he's not overwhelmed and they feel like that. Short-term pains and not winning a lot of games in his rookie year just to develop that in exchange for that long-term gain. Or how much would he be willing to go with the guy who can get me a W right now, even if it's not the best thing for the long-term development of a franchise QB?
Right. Well, I think that's an organizational issue, right? I think the front office sees big picture. They see 2018 and 2019, and who knows, he can't afford to look that long. So I think he does weigh it. I think he also weighs the fact that if this kid's not ready, I don't want to put him out there and make him look bad, right? Like, you have to know that this kid's not going to be shaken, not going to be rattled, or just not play so poorly that it's a disaster, and then you have to think about benching him. So I think you have to take all those things into consideration, where if we start him week one, we're committed to him. He's going to start every game he's healthy this season, and we're going to see how he plays. So that's why Hugh's being deliberate. But the other point I think you have to consider is, what's the alternative? Is Brock Osweiler that much better? Does he give you that much better chance to win week one? And before last night, I would have said yes. I don't know what percentage better chance he gives you, but it was a clear better chance. And not that one preseason game should shape my thinking, but I feel better about Kizer, and I feel like that gap isn't that large, knowing Brock Osweiler's track record.
I think that's fair to say. You look at that track record, Scott, and it doesn't impress you. It doesn't inspire you to think, well, this is a great guy. I feel like, though, there has to be that kind of a placeholder if a guy, again, this is all ifs. You said if he's not overwhelmed, do you just, go ahead and put him in there and let him learn and develop for the long term? So there's a lot of ifs there. But if it's in between, if there's a question between he might be ready, but he might be a little bit not ready, a little bit overwhelmed, whatever case you want to, however you want to phrase it.
Yeah.
I feel like there's always got to be that placeholder, doesn't there? And it's probably not Cody because he's too young and he's not an established guy. You know, Osweiler has been a starter in the league for two different franchises for multiple games. At least, he can guide you, maybe not even guide you, understand, manage the game, don't commit too many turnovers, all the stuff that you look for a guy like that to do just until you are 100% sure you're not going to wreck the confidence of a guy like Kizer throwing him into soon.
Right. I mean, that's exactly what Hugh Jackson's weighing. And Osweiler will get you in and out of the huddle. He's probably not going to miss a blitz that's coming and get his head taken off. I mean, all those things that veteran quarterbacks, guy who started 21 games in the league, I want to say, they know how to do that. They know all the ins and outs. They can get you out of the huddle, and Kizer struggled with that a little bit yesterday. So I understand that, and if you're Hugh Jackson and you want to set a tone week one and you don't want the chance for a disaster, then I get that Osweiler is a safe play, and you can go to Kizer in week four or week six, whenever you want to do that. However, I think if Kaiser's going to be a franchise quarterback, playing him week one and having the snot get kicked out of him, possibly, shouldn't destroy him. It didn't destroy Peyton Manning. It didn't destroy Troy Aikman. It didn't destroy Derek Carr. I mean, we're talking guys who went 1-15 in their rookie year. And Carr lost his first 10 games, and that was only a couple years ago, and then he becomes a Pro Bowl quarterback. So if you believe your quarterback is mentally tough enough, physically tough enough, and mentally sharp enough, then I'm not sure that would keep me from starting him week one.
I think that's fair enough. Scotty, let's talk about some more of what you saw last night. It wasn't all about DeShone Kizer. A big part of it was, though, a lot of eyes were on the number one draft pick in the NFL draft, and that's Myles Garrett, who said he wanted to dominate every time he steps on the field, whether it's a preseason game or it's midseason or a playoff game. He wants to be the most dominant force on that field. It's a commendable aspiration. Probably didn't achieve that last night. What did you see?
No, but he was good. I mean, he didn't have any sacks, but, you know, they double-teamed him a lot. Had one quarterback hit that forced a third down incompletion, had a tackle for loss, had another tackle at the line of scrimmage, chased down a play which showed his hustle. I feel about this kid, the more I'm around him, the more I'm impressed by him. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to turn into DeMarcus Ware or Bruce Smith, but he's got all the gifts you're looking for physically. You know, we still have to see if his pass rush repertoire is big enough to, you know, beat NFL quality left tackles consistently. But I like him physically. I like his attitude, and he's got the right balance of humble and confident. You know, he said those lines and I was listening to him, but he never came off as boastful. You know, he just kind of matter of factly. He just kind of was the third sentence in a three sentence answer. Like, wow. He's a thoughtful kid. I really like him, and if he stays healthy, I think he has a chance to be a big-time player, and I wouldn't be shocked at all if he's, you know, Defensive Rookie of the Year, which you'd expect from a number one pick, but I've seen enough in the first couple of weeks of camp to make me think he's got a chance to get 8-10 sacks.
Give me your impression, Scott Petrak, who joins us from Cleveland with a review of the Browns preseason opener, a win over the New Orleans Saints, Greg Williams' former team. Give me your impressions of Jabril Peppers, another guy people up here care about because he's a Michigan product. He had a couple of moments where he perhaps could have done something with a punt return, decided a fair catch in one of those cases. Overall, your impressions?
Yeah, you know what? He's come on lately. You know, I was a little skeptical about that pick. I wasn't sure where he fit defensively. And the Browns are still trying to they're not going to pigeonhole him. They're still trying to find what role and what ways they can use him best. He's taking snaps at strong safety. He's taking snaps at free safety, which he didn't do at Michigan. He's getting the punt returns. We've seen him, you know, it wouldn't be a shock if he took some Wildcat snaps on offense. So they're asking the guy to do a lot. And starting with that scrimmage, he really came on. When you're able to tackle to the ground, Pepper shows up. He puts a thump on guys. He's a big-time athlete. He showed a little bit in the return game. He was kicking himself for fair catch and one when he had some room to run.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about, right.
Yeah. Yeah, and he just said that, you know, in college, when the ball hangs that long, you never have room. But the college guys can go as soon as the ball snapped. The NFL guys have to wait until the ball's kicked. So there's a different timing you have to get used to. I don't think that'll be an issue much longer. So I like him. You know, it's going to be up to him to handle all the different things mentally. And we could see some mistakes. We could see him give up a big play here or there. But I think he's kind of turned the corner from where I thought, man, I'm not sure if this guy can play regularly on defense. I've kind of changed my mind on that.
Let me ask the last question by giving you kind of a free rein here. Who jumped off the page? Anybody in the film room today jump off the screen at coaches? Maybe they didn't expect one of the new rookies or an undrafted free agent or anybody else that you saw that really, really impressed you last night.
Yeah, let me give you two defensive guys. Joe Schobert, who I think was a fourth-round pick last year, didn't do much. Was out of the defensive rotation early, was just a special teamer. He was miscast as a 3-4 outside linebacker. Now he's playing middle in the 4-3, and he's pushing Tank Carter to be the starting middle linebacker. And he had a good game last night. He had a pass breakup. He was in on a sack, had to get a tackle for loss. And he looks athletic. He looks more comfortable where he is, and he's calling all the defenses. So he's been a pleasant surprise, and he's a guy I kind of dismissed coming into the camp. He's shown up. And then Nate Orchard, who's a second-round pick 3 years ago, was hurt a lot, hasn't done anything, playing with the backups, was in the backfield all day long. So he's not guaranteed a roster spot, but he showed last night that, hey, you know, if they need a fourth end, maybe he can be that guy.
Good stuff by Scott Petrak. Scott, that's why we wanted to talk to you. Browns get a win 20-14 over the Saints in their preseason opener. DeShone Kizer, Toledo product, Central Catholic star, 11 of 18, 184, had a touchdown and a quarterback rating of 114.1 in his debut in the National Football League. Great, great stuff. Scotty, thank you so much for the breakdown. I appreciate it always and hope to talk to you again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you, Scott. You got it. All right, 4:32. Guess what? We're going to stay on the National Football League on the other side of the Sports Center because we are just a couple of days away from the preseason lid lifter for the Detroit Lions. Yes, Lions and Colts on Sunday at 1:30. So coming up, Jeremy Reisman is going to join us from SB Nation and Pride of Detroit. But not until I tell you about the new location for Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill. Brand new at the Franklin Park Mall. If you love Mexican food, and I do, you're going to love this. Brand new inside. The bar, the booths, the tables, the chairs, everything. Great atmosphere, authentic Mexican feel, plus a great comfy lounge to kick back a few drinks in before sitting down for dinner. Listen, the best part, happy hour every day. Not just Wednesdays, not just Tuesday nights. Every day, 7 days a week, from 3 to 6, with insane drink specials. And oh, by the way, if you're trying to watch your weight, and I'm watching mine go up, try the Signature Margarita. It's their version of the Skinny Margarita, a healthier way to have your margarita. Plus, Taco Tuesdays every week, tacos for $1. Don't forget the original location. That's in Maumee on Dussel. But the new location is at Franklin Park on the Monroe side of the mall between JCPenney's and Dillard's, directly across from Nick and Jimmy's. It's not in the food court. You enter from the outside directly from the brand new paved parking lot at the Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill, now at Franklin Park Mall. And we're back to talk Lions with you next, right after this, on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
We're going to stay in the NFL for the remainder of the show. Thanks to Scott Petrak for breaking down things from the Browns' perspective as they started the preseason with a win last night at First Energy Field. Now, or First Energy Stadium, rather. Now let's talk a little bit about the Detroit Lions. They start their NFL preseason with game number one on Sunday at 1:30 against the Indianapolis Colts. Jeremy Reisman joins us now from SB Nation, prideofdetroit.com, and from Chrysler, the York Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram on Central Avenue, Jim Cushlin weighing back in as well. First, Jeremy, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
We're great, man. Great, great to have you back on the program here in Toledo. We always appreciate your time. Cush, you got us as well?
I'm here. We're ready to go.
All right. Hey, Jeremy, I'm going to do the same thing with you that I did with my last guest. Even though we're talking about the Lions in your case, got to ask you about the only story everybody in the NFL is really paying attention to now, not the Sammy Watkins trade to the Rams, but the Ezekiel Elliott six-game suspension. Same question I asked my last guy was, six games, too many, too few, or just about right?
Well, I mean, that's a hard question to answer without me seeing the evidence. Yeah, without seeing the evidence that the NFL apparently has, but, you know, they did set out a league policy that says six games is kind of the standard now. That was a new policy I think they set forth in 2014. So by the rules, I guess it's just right, but I'd have to wait and, like, see exactly what they're basing the suspension on in the first place since there wasn't any charges brought forth.
Yeah, they you know, they ran down a list of all of the things that they have. And what I told my last guy too was if they don't have these things, they are setting themselves up for an extraordinary lawsuit because they're claiming in their letter to their public statement on the suspension and in their direct letter to Zeke Elliott announcing the informing him of the suspension, they say they have testimony, they have photos. Digital photos, meaning actual evidence of the injuries caused to the woman in July of last year on three separate occasions during a one-week period. They have the testimony of medical experts on the age and the cause of the injuries and digital records, including thousands of texts between the two, which indicate admissions. So if they don't have all of those things, they're in trouble because they're making stuff up and slandering a guy, and he's going to own the NFL. If they do have those things, which because of the last statement I feel like they do, if you believe that that is the case, that they have all of those things and that there is evidence of three assaults of a woman in a one-week period, man, to me, that's just a bad guy. That's just a really, really bad guy, and I don't think six games is enough, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, though, you know, it depends on the veracity of all the evidence they have. You know, there was testimony that the police threw out because there was inaccurate records, but once again, it's really hard to pass judgment without seeing the actual evidence and only hearing what the evidence is about.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's fair to say. But it is quite an amazing thing. The NFL, not only did they say you're suspended for six games, they were so enraged, maybe that's the wrong word, so concerned, so worried, whatever, about the evidence that they do have. They said not only you're out for six games, they warned him any further transgressions could result in banishment from the league. I mean, going from six games to you're done, you're not playing for us anymore. That's that kind of shows how serious they're taking this. Some people are saying, Jeremy, that this is in reaction to the Ray Rice thing, that they didn't handle that correctly at the beginning, so they're trying to flex their muscle now. Do you buy that?
I don't really, to be honest. If anything, I would say it would be in reaction to maybe the Josh Brown thing, the Giants, I think, punter or kicker.
Kicker,
who
yeah.
He got off with one game for admitting to domestic dispute charges. So if there was anything that was bungled, maybe worse than the Ray Rice situation, I think that one is being a little unreported, maybe just because he's a kicker.
Yeah, and then plus the Giants realized after the fact, I mean, they looked really bad by saying they stand by him, but then they realized, okay, we have all kinds of terrible evidence against him now, including his own admissions, and then they cut him. So once a guy's cut and he's out of the league, it's kind of, nobody's really going to be outraged anymore. He's not lining up to kick again, and that's probably why that one is put to bed. Last thing on this, Jeremy, just to get your thoughts on what I found to be more of an apt comparison here. Precedes Ray Rice. It precedes Josh Brown. And it goes back 7 years. In 2010, Ben Roethlisberger was just accused of sexually assaulting a woman in a Pittsburgh bar. They investigated. Two different law enforcement agencies investigated. Prosecutors declined to press charges for lack of evidence. And the NFL suspended him. Do you remember for how many games?
I believe it started as six and then it got reduced to four. Is that right?
Bingo. Identical.
Yeah.
He got a six-game suspension for even though he was not charged in a criminal court or by law enforcement, and nobody complained. Everybody just said, man, that's a bad dude. That's some really evil stuff. That's, they didn't prosecute this guy despite sexual assault, blah, blah, blah. Nobody went to the free Ben card. But today, in an identical circumstance, identical insofar as accused by a woman, in Roethlisberger's case, sexual assault, in this case, just physical assault, domestic violence, accused by a woman, not charged by authorities, six-game suspension, one guy was just, he got what he deserved, the other guy, it's free Zeke. Why do you think that is?
Honestly, I think it's just maybe more awareness now. This has obviously been a much hotter issue since back in 2010. There's been so many cases, so many accusations. I think it's just a case, and in this case, a good, outcome that people are more aware of this sort of issue. And unfortunately, that brings out a lot of vocal people on both sides, but the fact that there's at least a conversation going, I would say if there's anything good to come about all these horrible accusations, it's that there's a lot more awareness of it going on.
Yeah, I suppose. The only problem I have with that argument is that it's awareness that should lead to more concern that people are,
right.
Women are being beaten and abused, and in this case, the awareness has led to people saying, "Let him play, let him play." They're not concerned about the woman who made the allegations. They want the guy released and able to play. They think he's being treated unfairly, which is just a bizarre turn of events for me. But there'll be a lot of time to discuss and figure that stuff out. Let's talk about game number one of the preseason for the Lions. It's going to be on Sunday at 1:30 against the Indianapolis Colts. What's the very first thing you want to see from the Lions on Sunday?
It's going to be their offensive line play. There's just so many questions on it right now. It's unlikely that TJ Lang is going to play at right guard. Obviously, the Lions have a pretty contentious battle at left tackle now that Taylor Decker is likely out for at least 6 weeks. I just want to see Matthew Stafford be protected. I don't want to see him get injured in a meaningless preseason game, or I'm assuming they'll probably have the offensive line out there a little bit longer than Matthew Stafford. So we'll see if they can really protect the quarterback and maybe open up some holes for Amir Abdullah.
Kush, what do you got, buddy? Go ahead.
You know, I'm thinking about this. This is going to be one of my first questions to you, Jeremy, on that offensive line. I'm wondering what kind of a look, though, you're going to be able to get out of the offensive line. The news today, because they're already in Indianapolis, are the Lions. They had a kind of one of those joint practices against the Colts yesterday. And Rick Wagner now, the right tackle, he left. It's undisclosed technically as of right now, so he's not going to end up playing on Sunday. You're already out. Taylor Decker, of course, that's for the whole first half of the season. And then you mentioned Lang. Yeah, he sat out practice again. He's rehabbing from that off-season hip surgery. He's missed his fifth already. So on paper, three of your five offensive linemen starters are going to be down. So regardless of how much the rest of them play, how big of a thing is that going to be? Because, quite frankly, one of the things I was happiest about with the Lions in their offseason was their addressing of the offensive line, and now via injury, they're dropping like flies.
Well, the Lions, they actually did get a little bit of good news. They had their second joint practice today this morning, and Rick Wagner was there and basically showed no signs of injury whatsoever. He competed all practice, was you know, activated, showed no signs. We still don't know what the injury was yesterday. So I would say there's still a chance that he plays on Sunday. They might just keep him out of precaution, but you're absolutely right. This is what the offensive line that we see on Sunday is hopefully not the one that the Lions are going to see week one against the Cardinals. So you won't be able to see, you know, draw a ton of conclusions based on their play, but, you know, injuries happen during the regular season too, so I'd like to see what Joe Dahl can do, and I'd like to see what Graham Glasgow does in his second year. And Travis Swanson had a really good 2016 season, but not so good in the seasons before, so I want to see if that improvement was real or if it was just kind of a one-year deal.
Jeremy Reisman joining us from SB Nation. The Lions site is prideofdetroit.com. Jeremy, how many hours do you work a day?
Well, I'm pretty much on Twitter, I would say, about 13 hours a day.
I mean,
so
I'm
always connected.
I don't know how much, but I'm looking at the site by Jeremy Reisman, by Jeremy Reisman, by Jeremy Reisman. I mean, Jesus criminy, of the six featured stories at the top, five of them are yours, and as you go down to the latest, which is your, you know, the listing of your columns and articles that you guys are doing on, Jeremy Reisman. Ryan Matthews, hey, thanks, Ryan. Appreciate the contribution. Mike Payton, Jeremy Reisman. I mean, honest to God, dude, you write how many columns or articles a day? Mike Payton got another one in there. Well done, sir. Alex Reno, where you been? Got you now. I mean, honestly, brother, you are putting in the work.
I appreciate that. We average about 9-10 articles a day, especially during the actual season. I'm kind of the news guy and the general managing editor there, so I take the bear of the brunt. This is my full-time job at this point, so the other guys actually have a really great staff, and they support me when I want to take a vacation or, you know, have a sick day or stuff. But I don't mind the workload. It's what I like to do.
One of the big things you wrote about, one of those top featured pieces, the return of Eric Ebron to practice. Is he going to play Sunday?
I would doubt it. Caldwell mentioned that today. He said he expects Ebron maybe full go on sometime next week, essentially. He only participated in individual drills today, so he was sidelined when the two teams were going at it. So I would not expect him Sunday, but I would say a decent chance of seeing him in week two of the preseason.
Every time we talk about Eric Ebron, I have to ask you about Michael Roberts because he's a Toledo product, the Rockets. Fourth-round draft pick? Somewhere in that neighborhood. About Michael Roberts. How's he progressing, and how much time do you expect him to get on Sunday against the Colts?
I'd say he's going to get a pretty heavy look on Sunday, partially because I believe Eric Ebron's going to sit out. Darren Fells, the free agent that the Lions signed, he's really been drawing most of the attention at tight end in the first 2 weeks of training camp. But Michael Roberts is also, you know, going to get a lot of attention. And, you know, he's got those huge hands. He's a guy that I think Lions fans are really excited to see, especially in the red zone. Lions fans will probably remember a couple of years ago, Joseph Fourier kind of became that red zone specialist. I think that's maybe the ceiling of what you can expect Michael Roberts in his rookie year, maybe, you know, 5-6 touchdowns. That being said, I do think he's not going to get a huge workload this season. Mm-hmm. The Lions have two tight ends that are easily better than him at this point, but I think moving forward, he brings a pretty big threat in the passing game. He'll just have to kind of work on the blocking end of things to be that more well-rounded tight end that I think the Lions are looking to complement Eric Ebron with.
And they need, they really do need a tight end who can block a little bit too. The running game is so very important, what they were able to do with Matthew Stafford. We know that the tight end position in today's NFL, you know, is largely, you know, what, you know, Antonio Gates and Tony Gonzalez and some other guys have made, for crying out loud, why am I drawing a blank on the Seahawks kid who was so good in New Orleans.
Jimmy Graham,
thank you. It's such a receiving position, and Michael Roberts, you know, kind of fits that. But, you know, there are some teams, where, you know, you have to run the ball perhaps more than others to be successful, and that includes having that sixth blocker, that sixth, you know, real effective run blocker as well, and that's something that he'll have to certainly work on becoming part of. Jimmy Cushing, go ahead.
Thinking about the running game and the running back crew that the Lions have, they're pretty much all healthy right now. What's the depth chart for the running backs, Jeremy, look like, and how much action are we going to see from some of these guys on Sunday? Because I still think that's an important group for the Lions. If they can start providing more and more, it's just going to expand the offense.
Yeah, and I think Amir Abdullah is one of the guys that I think Lions fans are most excited to see. You know, he had such an exciting start to the 2016 season, then suffered that injury just six quarters into the season. So I think we'll see. I think the Lions are going to still be careful with him, so we might only see one or two series out of him. And then Theo Riddick, I would say, is questionable at best to play on Sunday. He's been wearing a red no-contact jersey because of wrist surgery that he had in the offseason. So you'll probably get a healthy dose of Zach Zenner, Mike James, Matt Asiata, Tion Green, probably a bunch of guys that a lot of you haven't heard of, and probably won't really contend for a roster spot. Although one battle I think to look at is for that fourth spot between Matt Asiata and Dwayne Washington. Washington is a guy who's in contention for the kick return job, so you'll probably see him, you know, return a kick or two, and then if he can provide some offensive help, he could kind of have that edge over the veteran Matt Asiata.
We're talking to Jeremy Reisman of PrideofDetroit.com. That's the Lions SB Nation site. Jeremy, we're a little short on time. Let me ask you about the other piece that you wrote, or another piece you wrote about the rest of the North. Everybody struggled a little bit early. Mitch Trubisky, though, you talk about a tremendous debut. We have to remind people, of course, that it's going against, you know, seconds and thirds and other things. He was the third quarterback on the field, in fact, behind Glennon and Mark Sanchez. But, boy, big controversy on draft day when the Bears risked their future and rolled everything out and took Mitch Trubisky, and he looks like he's got the goods.
He absolutely does. As much as I hate to admit it, that choice that the Bears made on draft day is looking more and more right. I mean, like you said, obviously, we need to temper our expectations a little bit when it's the first game and against third and fourth string Broncos guys. But the throws that he was making, you know, it doesn't really matter the competition he was making them against. I was seeing him on the run dropping dimes, like exactly where they need to be. Tough throws to make, and they're just, you know, right where they need to be. So, you know, it doesn't really matter who those throws are coming against if they're perfectly placed. I'm a little weary of moving up one spot and spending that much so to do it. I think Trubisky probably would have been there at three had they not traded up. But if they got their franchise quarterback for the future, no one's going to look back at that trade and shake their finger at it.
I think that's very well said, my friend. And listen, we are out of time. We got to go. But thanks for giving us a little bit of a preview on what we can look for. I think all of us are going to be watching the offensive line. If you're interested to see what the Lions have going into the start of the season, it will indeed be how well they can open holes and protect Mr. Stafford and the other quarterbacks to follow. So good stuff, Jeremy. Thanks. Try to take a break over the weekend, will you? I mean,
I'll take Saturday off.
6 or 7 articles a day instead of 9 or 10. What do you think?
All right, I'll see you about it.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Good stuff. Jim Cushlin, thanks to you for being out there at YARC. Great stuff today as well. And thanks to you for listening and being a part of the show. I remind you again, as we sign off and turn it over to Mike Miller in your drive time, this is not unprecedented, Ezekiel Elliott fans. This is not some sort of unfair dictatorial move made by Roger Goodell. Same thing was done 7 years ago, long before Josh Brown or Ray Rice, when Ben Roethlisberger got a 6-game suspension despite never being charged, only to be alleged to have assaulted a woman. This is not new. What Zeke Elliott is going through right now is established policy, and he has deserved it. See you Monday right here on The Ticket. Bye-bye.